From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Celinda Lake and Kellyanne Conway are two of the country's top trackers of political and cultural trends, and they are from opposite ends of the political spectrum, true blue and true red. But from their liberal and conservative polls, these two influential women say they've spotted something remarkable across the country. American women becoming the driving engine of American life. They're ready to make big claims about what women want, how they're about to get it, and how they are changing the country. This hour On Point, the case for the rising power of women in America. You can join the conversation. Do you see women as the new driving engine of American priorities? Will women dominate this century? And what would that mean for the United States? Women, do you feel stronger in your own life, more empowered and in control? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Later in this hour, we'll get the latest from Baghdad, where there have been tremendous explosions this morning outside the Palestine Hotel. Many explosions there, but these particularly large, and we will hear from Baghdad. But joining me right now are two of the country's top pollsters and co-authors of a new book on women in American life entitled What Women Really Want. Celinda Lake is a leading Democratic strategist and pollster with a focus on getting women elected. She's worked for Emily's List, the Sierra Club, Planned Parenthood, and the AFL-CIO. She joins us from Washington. Celinda Lake, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
And Kellyanne Conway's with us. She's a market research leader and conservative pollster. Her clients have included Major League Baseball and Martha Stewart, but also the National Rifle Association, the Conservative Christian Family Research Council, and the Republican National Committee. She joins us from ETCO, New Jersey. Kelly Conway, welcome to you.
Well, good morning.
So there's our odd couple, co-authors of the new book, What Women Really Want, and this big, long subtitle, How American Women Are Quietly Erasing Political, Racial, Class, and Religious Lines to Change the Way We Live. A big claim in that title. Kellyanne Conway, what's the heart of what you're saying here?
The heart of what we're saying is that women are so powerful, but so busy being so powerful, they probably don't even recognize the power that they're wielding as consumers, as the strongest demographic group in our country, and eventually, I think, with greater fortitude at the ballot box. But that women are no longer being very loud or even very boisterous about this revolution. They're binding together to form consensus day by day, whether it's on the highways, in the workplaces, in mothers' groups. And they're empowering each other and wielding tremendous power just by doing and by living. And I think part of our underlying point, Tom, is if that they ever actually got together, even little subgroups of them, to understand their power and collectivized it in a way to use it, they would be a real force.
Celinda Lake, I want to do a lot of listening this hour, but let me ask you just first to go to this basic point. Kellyanne Conway uses the language again that women are binding together. Your title says that you're erasing political lines. What's the evidence of that? In the last presidential election, I mean, weren't women just as kind of divided along red and blue, Republican and Democrat, conservative and liberal, as the rest of the country?
Well, there were a number of things that women were united on. One of the things that women were united on in the last election was their tremendous concern about security. And in fact, Democratic candidates, frankly, had trouble addressing that concern to the degree that we should have, and lost a number of women voters because of that. A second thing that united women in the last election was that they turned out in record numbers, particularly unmarried women, which is one of the biggest growing political forces out there. 4.5 million more turned out than had ever turned out before. And then women were tended to disproportionately favor women candidates. They were united in their sense of wanting to have more women involved in politics and more women candidates running at every level. And I think one of the most important things that we identify in the book is that the last election was a bit of an anomaly. The last election was really dominated by what we call in the book the We Agenda, war and the economy. But women are really bringing the HERS agenda to the table, healthcare, education, retirement, and security. That's the agenda that's likely to dominate the 2006 elections and really to dominate the 2008 elections. And so look for women to be setting the agenda and look for both parties to be competing for their votes.
And Kellyanne Conway, I want to get into the details here, but let me just ask once more, and I'm sure we'll come back to it. But with these concerns, security, health care, education, retirement, of course, there are many ways to address those concerns, to approach them. Do you really think that a century where women have a higher profile, maybe even in the Oval Office, and you predict a woman on the ticket within 10 years of now, does it mean a less polarized country?
It may. What it probably means is that more and more women will eschew these political labels, this right versus left dichotomy that obsesses Washington and, frankly, the rest of the country every 2 or 4 years. Mm. And instead of arguing right versus left, they'll be very happy assimilating right versus wrong. And it seems to me that when you can cast any of the issues that Celinda is speaking of in a right versus wrong type of rubric, in other words, what is the proper role of government, by what means, and I think that's where the differences and the distinctions still will come into play, which is that people may share, women may share the same goal about reforming Social Security, protecting Medicare, but the means may be different. But the reason that many women say to us in focus groups and polls, Tom, is the reason they say, oh, I hate politics, or I don't like politics, or when women say that, it's because they really don't like the process, and they really don't like the what they call the negative advertising, the mudslinging. But we need to convince women that when you say, I don't like politics, it's tantamount to saying, I don't care about health care, or it doesn't matter to me who runs our education system. And when you cast it that way, it really is a wake-up call to many women to understand that if you're interested at all in public policy, including this HERS agenda, that you necessarily have to be interested and engage yourself in politics.
We'll come back and look at whether or not women may bring those polls closer together in a century where they may be much more predominant than they have been in the last century. Celinda Lake, I wish you'd begin to paint this picture that you outline from all the polling and research that you have done with Kellyanne Conway here. Of this changed profile of women, the new power of women, start to fill it in here. Where does it come from? What's the evidence?
Well, the evidence is throughout. First, we see the evidence of women really making changes in the economic sector. Women now determine 80% of the purchases out there. And in fact, the economic and cultural world have kept up, frankly, far more with the changes in women's power than the political world has. Women are now determining purchases not just of traditional items, but areas that they hadn't been in before. They're 51% of eBay. They're 51% of technology buyers, of car buyers. So tremendous change there. Women are the fastest growing segment of small business owners. And in fact, in our survey, 46% of women wanted to start their own small businesses. Women-owned businesses now create more jobs than the Fortune 500, and women-owned businesses are changing the agenda of the small business associations, putting health care ahead of even tax cuts. We see women being, particularly the unmarried women, which is one of unmarried America, being a huge sea change out there. Only 25% of families now fit the traditional model. Mm. And we see women, particularly unmarried women, being the fastest growing everything, fastest growing investors, first time home buyers, second time home buyers. Women really changing how they live their lives. They're not living it sequentially anymore. They may be making the same choices, but it's a mosaic. And now you may find 3 45-year-old women sitting next to each other in their office desk. One is a single career woman, one is the mother of an 8-year-old, and one is a grandmother. So that women are making different choices. Women are leading in the cultural world. 66% of divorce is now initiated by women. So in a sea change, as well as the areas you mentioned, like women dominating the professional schools and colleges, we see women really quietly coming into their own.
And Kellyanne, you write with Celinda Lake, you say, without fanfare, almost stealthily, America has become women-centric. What does that mean?
Well, if you look at anything from advertising to magazines to almost every network except for ESPN, perhaps, you even look at advertisements in some male magazines, and you cannot mistake but know that Madison Avenue and Consumer America is very attuned to the fact that women are dominating the decisions. If you go into any grocery store and you see how they've been reconfigured, for example, if you see the way cars and automobiles are now outfitted. I mean, nobody put a global positioning system, a GPS that gives you directions in a female voice for men who stereotypically don't even stop to ask for directions. And so I think it's been the result of maybe some strong research of the kind that Celinda and I do. Other people are doing it out there for sure. But it's also just by the fact that you've got more women as workers and more women rising through the ranks in different industries and giving their own input anecdotally and personally into everything from the design to the function to the packaging. Single serving and portion controlled food.
You're talking consumption there. Will it extend to foreign policy, to national policy on health and retirement and all the rest? Does it get out of the grocery store?
Well, that's, I think, one of our arguments, Tom, is that it should. In other words, what we're both doing is asking our respective political parties and candidates and clients to stop treating women as voters every 4 years and start to look at their lives through the same prism through which these women are examining theirs. And we recognize most women do not wake up in the morning and say, I'm a Republican or I'm a liberal, so today I'll go and do this, that. They're waking up and they're saying, I'm a small business owner, or I'd like to be. I'm a mother of three, or I'd like to be. I'm worried about my ailing grandmother. I don't have health benefits. I'm late. I'm tired. Whatever it is they're saying. We need to collect that light and reflect it back to them through a prism that is more kaleidoscopic than the monochrome through which many politicians, and I believe most political parties, tend to look at women. So Linda's point about generational compression and those 3-45-year-old women she speaks about may be the most important insight from the entire book, because that's not apt to change anytime soon. We have first-time mothers now at 45. We did not have it 20 years ago. We will have it 20 years from now.
Kellyanne Conway, Celinda Lake, stand by. I read more than that here. You say women are shaking the culture to its core. We'll come back and look at how that's happening. 1-800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new clout of women in American culture and politics. My guests are an unlikely duo, two top national pollsters, one right, one left. Kellyanne Conway and Celinda Lake are co-authors of the new book, What Women Really Want. Big subtitle, How American Women Are Quietly Erasing Political, Racial, Class, and Religious Lines to Change the Way We Live. They're making big claims here. Women are outvoting men by a far piece. 10 million women, more women than men, voted in the 2004 election. They're filling up places in colleges and professional schools across the country. They are the majority of first-time single home buyers now. You'll get me right on that, Celinda and Kellyanne. Just right across the board, they're stepping up. These two are making big claims. What do you think? Do women really want something different from what men want? And are women the new driving engine of the American agenda? Do you see the new, more powerful women's influence around you? Do you see the influence that Lake and Conway see? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk. Celinda and Kellyanne, I hope we can go through here a little bit segment by segment. You look at the family structure and women's role in it and point to some big changes there. Celinda, what's important?
Three things are important. One thing that's important is the tremendous rise in single America and unmarried America and the really dramatic power that unmarried women are gathering both in the political arena, where both parties are targeting them. The Democrats have been more successful to date, but as Kellyanne talks very eloquently about, the Republicans need to get on board in targeting them because this segment's going to continue to grow.
Why? Who are we talking about? Is this widows? Is this younger women choosing not to marry? Is it divorcees? Or is it unmarried mothers? What's the picture?
It's a great question, because only a quarter of these women are under 25. And it used to be single used to mean young women who hadn't found the right man yet, or widows. And now it's everyone in between. And we find that many unmarried women are not choosing to wait on other decisions. They're buying homes. They're, as Kellyanne says, buying mutual funds and having munchkins. Maybe before they find Mr. Right. It used to be that marriage was a threshold to all of that, and now women are making those choices independently. Secondly, we find that there's a real sea change in the lives being lived by older women. Older women, we think of older women as being the care receivers. In fact, record numbers of older women are the caregivers, and we're finding a record number of children being raised by grandparents. We find the highest, fastest growing debt right now is actually among seniors, often trying to help their children.
Financial debt, you're saying?
Financial debt, yes. Often trying to help their children get a start. We find women in, we call 60 the new 50, and we see women at 60 going back to school, starting small businesses, changing careers, sometimes changing their marital status. So we find that senior women are really living their lives quite differently than they did a generation or two ago.
And Kellyanne, what's the implication for the nation, for the culture of women being alone or in charge in their households?
The implication is that they're going to be the chief and sole decision makers, even on items in the past which they either delegated to the men in their lives or where they had a minor role in sharing those responsibilities for the decision making, like cars, and then what we call the big blinky items, the gadgets, computers, and now iPods, perhaps if they're younger and single, certainly digital TV, and things that are going from the fringe and extreme and becoming much more mainstream, if not mass consumed. These women are making those decisions on their own. And curiously, when it comes to technology, both hardware and software, if you will, many of these women are taking their cues not from the men in their lives, but from the children in their lives, either their own children or the children of friends and colleagues and family members, to get to the latest and the greatest on the new technology. The other implication is, whereas Celinda says 60 is the new 40, there's no question that consumer America, and then I believe political America, will need to respond to that by recognizing that women in their 60s are thinking and living younger. But 40 is also, in some ways, the new 60. The reverse is true, because you have many of these women in their middle age years having to accelerate their knowledge on things like Social Security, Medicare, prescription drugs, because they become co-decision makers for mom and dad, and particularly mom, who will outlive dad by 5 to 7 years, depending on her health status and where she lives. So a 40-year-old in the past, Tom, could say, I've got 25 more years
to figure it out.
I need to think about retirement or what's going on with all these conflicting Medicare plans and competing prescription drug policies. But now they need to understand, now they need to steel themselves with the knowledge at this moment to be able to help mom make valuable decisions.
Kellyanne, let me ask you, I'm trying to figure out the political and cultural ramifications of all this. From your camp, if we can look at it that way, you've done a lot of work for conservative groups, including in the Family Research Council. Is this explosion of unmarried women a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Don't a lot of conservatives want to see everybody in family units, and maybe women in particular? Is this going to be embraced or resisted by the conservative part of the country?
I'm just trying to get it noticed before anybody passes a qualitative judgment on one way or the other. It should get noticed because it's an incontrovertible and dynamic fact. It is not static, and it is not an aberration of this last election cycle or of the moment where all of a sudden there's going to be an influx of 10 million available men who will just sweep these women off the feet and tell and get them off their career tracks or convince them that marriage and motherhood as a full-time career is for them. I just want to get it noticed, first of all, Tom. And what's going on, too, is let me not leave the impression with this book that many of these young women or many of these unmarried women have completely denied marriage. What many of them are doing is delaying it and deferring it. And they're delaying and deferring it not because they don't take marriage seriously, but precisely because they do. This is particularly true among the Generation Xers and the Generation Ys, and the oldest Xers turned 40 this year. But for many of them, in fact, 40% of them lived in a single-parent household by the age of 16. Mm. And for many of them, marriage was an unstable institution. They did not have good examples, healthy examples of it in their own lives. They were latchkey kids looking after younger siblings many times. It's made them very self-reliant, entrepreneurial, and libertarian, if anything. But in the marriage equation, it's made them a little bit gun-shy and hesitant. So they want to get it done right, and they want to get it done right once. And the thing is, they're waiting until they're in their 30s and 40s to do that. What I would tell the Republican Party also is, look what they're doing instead of getting married. They're buying their first homes. They're becoming first-time investors.
Yep.
They speak with a lexicon about taxes and regulatory policy that younger women particularly never have had before.
And now they've got it. Celinda Lake, what does that mean from your political poll here? You look at this, you describe this agenda, health, education, retirement, security, If women are more empowered within the household to begin with, maybe because they are the household, does that make them more open to a Democratic agenda? Or Kellyanne Conway is saying they're going out and being entrepreneurial. Are they becoming ownership society advocates?
It's a really good question. And women have voted more democratically traditionally, but not by huge margins, by like 10 points. There are certain groups. Women are not monolithic in their political attitudes. There are certain groups of women, like unmarried women, for example, who have voted significantly more democratic, almost two-thirds voting democratic. But there are groups of women that my party's also not paying enough attention to. The number one group that I would identify in that regard are the entrepreneurial women, the small business owners. We've tended to see that to the Democratic Party, and yet their top
issue— To the Republican Party, I think you mean
to the Republican Party, thank you. And yet their top agenda item is health care and health insurance.
Because they've got to cover their employees, or they want to.
Right. And they also want better coverage for their families.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the ones that are 80% of— healthcare voters are actually women. 80% of the people who said that healthcare is my number one priority are women voters. So they are making decisions for their own families, and that small business coverage may also be the coverage for their families.
It's fascinating.
So I think this is something that we need to pay more attention to. And, you know, our party prides itself on being for the little gal or the little guy.
Yeah.
I think small business owners are the ultimate little guy.
But where this shift in power ends up landing, right, left, or somewhere in the middle, fascinating question. We're trying to make it out here. We're at 1-800-423-8255 with Celinda Lake and Kellyanne Conway, co-authors of the new book, What Women Really Want. What women really have, they say, is power, and it's growing in this century. What do you think? Carlotta is calling from Salem, Massachusetts. Hi, Carlotta. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you.
I'm noticing that the new model that these women represent, a collaborative model.
Even in our co-authors here, you mean?
In the co-authors, indicates the woman's model. I've been researching this for the last 30 years, how women organize to do work. And part of what women do is they share power. It's a power with dynamic. So when women avoid the word politics because they don't like what's going on, it's because it's a power over or an adversarial win or lose model. And we're looking, I think, for none of the above or a new model.
How does that work with something like Roe v. Wade, Carlotta?
Well, I've never met women. This is such a woman's decision that to see it in a legislative container is really, I think, abhorrent to every woman I talk to. I don't believe women have ever felt that abortion is the answer. A better birth control is the answer. We can put people
for
on
men.
So it's the wrong end of the question. It's a question that's meant to be polarizing. Mm. And my question to these two women whose work I'm just so pleased at getting it, seeing it come out, how do we get women's voices front and center in a political system, since I was an elected official and I've been there, and I know what works to quiet and shut women off. How do they see women's voices being able to come front and center fast, because some important decisions are being made that really affect all of the safety net issues that we are very much concerned with, and for our sisters, no matter what party they're in. If you see women determine the family and the family's glue and cohesiveness, and when we see other women cut off around social safety net issues after 5 years of, and they've used up their wealth, we are concerned for those women.
Let us put to them, it is a great question, maybe the question. Carlotta, thanks for your call. Kellyanne Conway, first to you. You and Celinda Lake described this great sort of swelling base of power among women. Carlotta says, how do you take that and put it front and center, given the tradition we come from, given what we see in Fortune 500 CEOs, what we see in the U.S. Senate, what we see in pay and so on? How does it go front and center?
It goes front and center with more women making the choice to put it front and center, and I think more women doing two things, either shocking the conscience or warming the heart. What I mean by that is that you can either shock the conscience of the system in that you've got to see these glaring examples of people, women either still feeling discriminated against based on their gender or going right up to the male boardroom or to the male CEOs and demanding change, whether it be with on-site daycares or lactation rooms, frankly, or even the kind of flexibility that most women do not see in the workplace, which is why so many of them are becoming entrepreneurs, flexibility that is not necessarily institutional but individual, and demanding that flexibility and, frankly, threatening to leave if they don't get it.
But that still sounds like lobbying the powers that be.
More and more women in leadership positions now, whether it be in corporate America, retail, service industries, and certainly with the first-time law students being a majority female, first-time veterinarian students, first-time medical students being majority women, I think it's only a matter of time till you see more women in leadership positions, but it is going to take the next 10 or 15 years as the women who are currently the students are rising through the ranks in their respective industries. Because I said at the beginning of this conversation that women are so busy being powerful they don't know how powerful they are, the other side of the ledger is also true, which is they're not even sure how to collectivize and wield this power. I mean, isn't it so curious to all of us that we have more and more women in the federal Congress? You even have Nancy Pelosi, who leads the Democratic Party in the House, yet that we still rarely see women on the Sunday political talk shows. I mean, the female bookers and producers are not reaching out to these female spokespeople.
So put them
in the Democratic
front and center.
And Republican parties. And if you turn on any of the Sunday political shows just to find out what the two parties think about Harriet Myers, or the female nominee, by the way, or the Iraqi war, you get a couple of, you know, lovely, erudite, but white men telling you what everybody's thinking.
Celinda Lake, when does the swelling women's power come to the fore then? Carlotta wants to know, the nation's women want to know, are women going to wield power in a traditional way? Are they going to actually claim those, you know, front row seats, or are they going to wield power from behind men because that's the tradition?
Well, I think Carlotta's question is a great one, and one of the problems that we have is, you think about politics, it is all very conflictual, and even the language, campaign, war, negative campaigning, opponent, enhance the conflict. But we need to see women in critical mass, as you said in the beginning of this show, in the upper bodies of government, we only have 14-15%. The study of state legislatures shows that we need about a third. We need a critical mass of women to really see a change in the way the institution operates and the agenda. I'm looking forward to 2008, where I think we might very well have two women nominees. Each party may nominate a woman. And I think that our first woman president will clearly make a huge difference. But it's not just the first. We need more behind her. We need a third of our governors to be women so that voters see women in executive positions. So I think across the board, we need to see a critical mass of women's leadership.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Celinda Lake, let me ask you on that front, do you think that as women take on, I mean, here they are, they're filling up the seats in college, they're taking lots of positions, they're taking a lot of responsibility, are they going to insist that it's women who represent them? Or what about the tradition of men being the, you know, the anointed ones, the leading ones? Are women going to turn that over in this century?
I hope so, but there's a lot left to be that needs to happen. And what we've seen is that the kind of political system we have, which is a presidential system rather than a parliamentary system, has lagged seriously behind in terms of politics. Certainly the role that money plays in politics is discouraging. And women tend to think that politics is very, very hard to combine with a family life or even protecting your family. You may want to put yourself out front, but not your children or your spouse. So it's been the last arena to change. And I think one of the goals of this book in our minds was that we were seeing the changes so much more dramatically in the cultural arena, in the education arena, in the economic arena than we were in the political arena, that we wanted to bring that voice to the table. And as two women involved in politics, we thought it was very, very important for the people in our world, male and female, to recognize the level of change that's happening in other arenas.
So are you making an appeal essentially each to your own base, wake up and take advantage of this, or are you as women saying, come on, women, let's break out of those traces and try something new? Linda?
Some of both, I think. And also saying, but mainly saying to our institutions, look at the sea changes that are happening. You're going to be left behind because women are on the move. And what they're doing is they're leaving behind institutions that don't catch up with them. And this could be one of those institutions.
So heads up, here it comes. Celinda Lake and Kellyanne Conway are with me. Their new book is What Women really want, and they're describing women as very powerful, the power of this century. You can join us. Do you agree that women are having a unifying effect on the country across red and blue lines or not? And will women dominate 21st century America? What would that mean for the country, for the way we do things? 1-800-423-8255 is the number. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services in Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new clout of women in American culture and politics, a prediction that it's going to grow and grow dramatically, even from where it's come already, in this century. My guests, Kellyanne Conway and Celinda Lake, one from the right and one from the left, they've co-authored a new book entitled What Women Really Want, How American Women Are Quietly Erasing Political, Racial, Class, and Religious Lines to Change the Way We Live. You can join us if women are the new cultural and political power. How will the country change? And do you see evidence that it's happening? 1-800-423-8255. Rachel's calling from Westboro, Massachusetts. Hi, Rachel. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I guess something that concerns me is that I'm an academic, and I don't necessarily see the power coming to women, though there are certainly more women in academia. That what I see is that women coming through, my colleagues were having children and we're having to bend over backwards and hide the issues that are really important to us to pretend, no, we're just like our male counterparts.
Yep.
We don't worry about child care. We don't worry about all these other issues that are important to women.
Mm-hmm.
That my fear is that women who get into power in order to stay in power have to renounce all of the things that make them specifically women, that have the issues that my friends and I are wishing someone would talk about.
So what's the point of being a woman in that position if you're not bringing your issues to the table once you're there?
Right. That there's something about power in this country, the way it is enforced, that it means that even when women get power, the issues of women, the issues of families, affordable health care, affordable daycare, are pushed to the side because they're less important than the real issues. And I wonder if we can't get politicians to put this on the agenda, if we can't get CEOs and universities to take notice of these issues, how does all of our power ever manage to manifest itself in a meaningful way?
Rachel, you put that so concisely, so perfectly. Let me give it to our guests. Behind it all, the issue of what are the real issues, quote-unquote. Celinda, Kellyanne, I'm looking here. The Wall Street Journal today says there is little difference between the leadership styles of successful male and female bosses. Rachel's saying something like that. Once women get in power, they kind of conform to the existing culture in order to get into power and stay in power. Kellyanne Conway, do you really see a change? Do you see the women's agenda or priorities you're describing here being brought to the fore even when women get into those positions?
They can come to the fore, but I would go back to your first point, Tom, in that many women do feel, myself included, as a small business owner for going into the 11th year now,
mm-hmm.
that you have to almost be like a man by day. You really have to be a little unemotional. You can be passionate, but you must be unemotional. You must think in a linear way. You must deal with the economics and the hiring and the firing and the client cultivation, management, attraction, and retention, just
mm-hmm.
the way we think of men as doing, as well as then the, quote, softer issues like pregnancy leave or child care or health care benefits or bonuses. And it does seem that when women get to a position of power that they take on the role of men. But I have to give more women a little bit more credit than that, too. I don't think any woman emasculates herself when she gets to the top. And she's got her own perspectives, whether she has children or knows people who have children. And her natural will to be negotiating and to compromise and to even build consensus on many different things, whether it's she's militating peace between Johnny and Susie in the back of the minivan, or she's traditionally been the one asked to organize things at work, that she will naturally bring those skills to her leadership positions. I do want to say something else, too. I'm not so sure, and I don't want this book, my part of the book anyway, to come off as concluding that women are going to be able to collectivize and band together with some of this power so much as I think it's going to be used in a diffuse way. And the reason I say that is, number one, this explosion of entrepreneurship among women is a great thing, but it also means that more women are going to be individualized, not collectivized, mm-hmm. in the way that they wield this power. They're walking away from the many attempts to do more than smudge that glass ceiling, and they're just taking upon themselves to go and convert a hobby, a skill, and a passion into a full-blown business. Number two, that what I want your caller and the rest of us to recognize, which will be good, is that these younger women, particularly Generation Y now, they are demanding flexibility even ahead of salary and benefits in some place as the watchword in workplaces. And many of them say by the time they're going to be 30 years old, they want to stay home with their children. They are going to voluntarily opt out of the work system for a while. And so they're saying that for them, their best role is to be home with their children. The New York Times ran a front page article about this very subject 3 weeks ago after our book was printed, mm-hmm. but before we were on your show. And I think the upshot of all this is that women should be celebrating the choices that other women are making.
So, Linda Lake, how about it? Are women going to stride into the workplace, into their century, and become men by day, or are they going to bring a different agenda with them? And what does that mean for the workplace?
Well, I think two things. I think, number one, I think the caller made a great comment, and I would say this about her comment and the Wall Street Journal article. The first wave of women, and that's why I said maybe the first woman present will make less difference than the second and the third one, it often behave like men. It's when you get critical mass, when you start to get repetition. That's why we think we're on the cusp of really some dramatic changes, because you're getting into the second generation of women's leadership. The second thing we would say, and I would just underscore what Kellyanne said, a lot of women are going to only fight so long against these institutions that won't change. And what we see, particularly in the commercial world, is that they are exiting or they are creating parallel structures. Many women obviously won't be able, financially can't afford to, many families can't afford to have moms not working at home. But what we do see is that moms are uniting with dads now that Gen X men are also negotiating parental leave and benefits ahead of salary. We see that women are starting, and younger women want to, even more than older women, start their own small businesses because they think that I will provide the policies, I will have the flexibility. And we see men and women saying that they would rather work for a female boss because they think that she will be better about balancing work and family. Now, they also say that they'd rather not work for a female boss because they think if the company's being, if the economy's tough, she may not be as powerful as her male counterpart, and that you need a boss who can look out for your unit. So there is choice and power, and I think women are balancing these two, but sometimes they're saying, I'm sick of this fight. I'm just going to exit and create my own structures.
A lot of mixed signals, but they're mixed, and you're saying in many instances for the first time here. Craig is calling from Nashville. Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Very interesting show.
Good to have you. What are you thinking, Craig?
First of all, I'd like to say I believe that women overall, in my own experience, are more fair-handed and fair-minded and less confrontational with each other, except on both extremes, of course. I was in Arizona when there was top five positions in the state mm-hmm. were held by women, and I saw a big change. And so in the atmosphere, basically, mm-hmm. and they did accomplish quite a bit. And I'm a fair-minded person. I believe that there will be a woman in the White House within the next 7 years, two election cycles of president. I don't believe it'll be who everybody thinks it'll be.
You're talking Hillary there.
Yes, I believe.
I don't know if everybody thinks that, but a lot, yeah.
I believe Condoleezza Rice will be there before Hillary does.
And do you welcome that, Craig?
Yes, I would.
You think it makes for a better country, or it's just time to share the power?
I think it would be refreshing, and we've seen in Pakistan and India, other countries around the world, Britain, we've seen women heads of state who've done wonderful, and I think it would do something to calm the water, so to speak. I know a lot of people, you know, think she's too conservative, and a lot of people think Hillary's too liberal, but I believe it would change things, and I'm ready for change also.
Craig, thanks very much for your call from Nashville. Let's take another call here from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Louise is calling. Hi, Louise, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for the show. I wanted to make two points. Well, I'm a historian, mm-hmm. and I founded a small educational business, so I would like mm-hmm. to make two short points,
yes,
one
please.
On education, the other mm-hmm. on conservation. I think you have to look back to the Enlightenment and even beyond. Women have always been quite involved in education, and many, say, English, British colleges, not to speak American ones, were founded by women. Now, I think you have to also think of the 40-plus women who have the means of only working part-time, say, and who are very instrumental in a quiet way, whether it's in charities or in small businesses. And so education, first of all, has always been one point.
Mm-hmm.
Conservation, that is conservatism, but in the broadest humanistic sense, that is, they conserve the men and women they gave birth to, and they took so long time to raise. Now, I just wanted to point out that during the First World War, there were thousands of letters written by women on both sides, Germany, France, etc., who would have stopped the war very quickly. And I think that the problem with women is that precisely they're not coordinated enough. And even today, when you speak of the president, yes, that's one thing, but it's this individualistic and dispersed, very, very positive but dispersed way of acting, which doesn't sometimes have the means of communication, that is,
or grabbing that lever of power.
I would like to say that in Iraq, for example, I'd like to communicate more with women in Iraq, and I think, and also,
if you could just find the way to do it, Louise. Our time is so short. I think I've got to ask you to let me turn to our guest there. We've just got a couple of minutes left, and thank you for that point. Here's my question, as Celinda, like I put it at first to you. You describe a groundswell of women's power. So over the course of this century, if they're filling up the seats in college, they're buying the homes, they're dominating at the polls, do we change from a patriarchy to a matriarchy? Do you foresee a real fundamental change, or is it still men in charge even when women are pulling so much more of society's weight by the end of this century?
I think you will see a change. And I think you'll see much more women in charge. But I think that, and our previous speaker spoke to it, I think the biggest change that women will bring is shifting priorities. I think the things that our system now thinks of as conflictual, as zero sum, women will say no. It's not that we can have it. We can have it all, maybe not all at once, but we can combine these things in different ways. We can make different choices. We can accommodate an array of choices. We can make things better, and we can do things smarter. And I think that's the change that women will bring. I don't think it will be a noisy revolution. I think it will be a quiet revolution. I think those institutions that don't recognize this revolution will get left behind, which could be both political parties.
And Kellyanne, we've just got a very short time left here, but what about on the conservative end of the spectrum? Will they, in fact, welcome women in greater power? You know, there's some biblical admonitions to respect the man and put him at the head of the family. Will conservatives resist greater female power?
No, they won't resist it, but they'll also recognize it for what it is not. I mean, there's very little evidence in this book that women's increasing power is some natural byproduct of the feminist movement. If anything, we're in a post-feminist culture. And the fact that women are making their own choices and decisions should be celebrated by everyone, because those choices really run the gamut, from eschewing the career track altogether for the mommy track to the next stage, which would be mommy entrepreneurship, to remaining single and deciding not to be a mother at all, to finding ways to extend our longevity such that we can sequence our lives in the ways that we see fit with our own lifestyle priorities and choices. No political party or no ideological movement believes that its messages or its core messages will always attract everyone. But I will say, on the conservative end of the spectrum, there's great mutual coexistence among, say, pro-Second Amendment folks with pro-life groups, with pro-female entrepreneur groups, with pro-tax reduction groups. And so in the broadest terms, it's been referred to as the Leave Me Alone Coalition. And there's no reason that there's not more room in that very big movement for some of these women who are sequencing lives and making their own choices outside of the traditional norms.
Well, make of that map what you will, but there from the right and the left, the prediction and the word that it's happening already, women stepping into power. Kellyanne Conway and Celinda Lake, co-authors of the new book, What Women Really Want. Thanks to you both for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. breaking news and dramatic pictures coming out of Baghdad. According to early reports, two rockets and a car bomb have exploded in quick succession at the Palestine Hotel today, where many foreign journalists stay. There are reports of injuries, though details are still sketchy. Joining us now from Baghdad is Borzu Dargahi. He's correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Borzu, what can you tell us? What's happened there?
It was about an hour ago. There was a couple of very, very loud explosions that shook the city, shook our hotel room, which is a few miles away from the Palestine Hotel. It's really, really very much in the center of the city. These very, very large, almost mushroom clouds began towering up above the center of the city. We're just checking in with our colleagues, many of them who are at the Palestine Hotel, and it appears that everyone's all right. It's a little bit shaken up. Not only is the Associated Press and Fox News at the Palestine Hotel, but other news organizations, including the New York Times, Reuters, and BBC, are near the Palestine Hotel.
Borzu, it's hard for us to distinguish here. We have reports of car bombs and big explosions almost daily from Iraq. What's different about this?
Well, it looks like what's different about this one is the sheer size of the explosions, much bigger than usual, and also that it was targeting Western media, probably, or close to Western media, and I'm sure that was part of the insurgents' strategy in this case. What better way to get the maximum bang for your buck by targeting a site that's very close to television cameras?
We have heard 10 dead, but you're saying, as far as you know, not Western journalists at this point.
No, as far as I know, no Western journalists have been killed, or Iraqi journalists. From what I'm gathering, and this is very preliminary, the people that were killed were just passersby and maybe some guards.
Borzu, there were reports some time ago of American media pulling out of Iraq. Since then, a lot have hunkered down and stayed. Do you see the foreign press as getting skittish about being in Iraq at all?
Well, already many of the European and non-American press, non-British press, have evacuated Iraq, except for milestones, except like Saddam's trial. But for the British and the American journalists that are here now, Iraq is such an important story that many feel that it's worth the risks.
Worth the risks. Have you called your family to let them know you're all right?
Yeah, they know. Yes, I have.
Good. Borzu Dargahi with the Los Angeles Times. Thanks for being with us. The report there today of enormous explosions near the Palestine Hotel in central Baghdad, where much of the remaining foreign press corps is based. At this point, no reports of dead among that corps, though 10 are said to be dead. Very big explosions. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.